Our study tonight is out of Acts chapter 19, verses 21 through 41, God's protection from humanly overwhelming opposition. The book of Acts explains the orderly and sovereignly directed progress of the kingdom message from Jews to Gentiles and from Jerusalem to Rome. So we can learn much about aligning our ministry efforts with God's sovereign work from studying the book of Acts. Acts chapter 19, 21 to 41 records how Paul faced humanly overwhelming opposition to his physical welfare and to the credibility of his apostolic ministry, but how God sovereignly protected him in his ministry. So we view the passage for our insight, our application, and our edification. I'd like to read the verses and then we'll look at them. Acts 19, 21 to 41. And after these things were ended, Paul supposed in the Spirit, when he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, to go to Jerusalem, saying, after I have been there, I must also see Rome. So he sent unto Macedonia two of them that ministered unto him, Timotheus and Erastus, but he himself stayed on in Asia for a season. In the same time there arose no small stir about that way, that's the Christian way, for a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith, which made silver shrines for Artemis, brought no small gain unto the craftsmen, whom he called together with the workmen of like occupation, and said, sirs, you know that by this craft we have our wealth. Moreover, you see and hear that not alone in Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they do not be no gods which are made with hands. So that not only this our craft is in danger, to be set at naught, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis should be despised, and her magnificence should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the Roman world worships. And when they heard these things, they were full of wrath, and cried out, saying, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. And the entire city was filled with confusion, having been caught Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel, they rushed with one accord into the theater. And when Paul would have entered unto the people, the disciples would not permit him. And certain of the chief of Asia, who were his friends, sent unto him, desiring that he would not adventure himself into the theater. Some therefore cried one thing, and some another, for the assembly was confused. And the more part knew not wherefore they had been come together. And they drew Alexander out of the multitude, and the Jews putting him forward. And Alexander beckoned with the hand, and would have made his defense unto the people. But when they realized that he was a Jew, all with one voice about the space of 2 hours cried out, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. And when the town clerk had appeased the people, he said, you men of Ephesus, what man is there that knows not how that the city of the Ephesians is a worshipper of the great goddess Artemis, and of the image which fell down from Jupiter. Seeing then that these things cannot be spoken against, you ought to be quiet, and to do nothing rashly. For you have brought here these men, who are neither robbers of temples, nor yet slanderers of your goddess. Wherefore, if Demetrius and the craftsmen which are with him have a matter against any man, the law is open. And there are deputies, let them implead one another. But if you inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined by a lawful assembly. For we are in danger of being called into question for this day's uproar, there being no cause for whereby we may give an account of this concourse. And when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the entire assembly. Okay, this is a big issue. After Paul had experienced great progress in discipling at Ephesus, he planned to pass through Macedonia and Achaia again before traveling to Jerusalem and then on to Rome. Paul thus sent Timothy and Erastus ahead to Macedonia while he remained for a while at Ephesus in Asia. Apparently, Satan meant to block Paul's having great ministry success in Rome. He was aware of the fact that Paul was planning to go to Rome. He didn't want to see happen in Rome what had happened in Ephesus. So, he set about to destroy the apostle with humanly overwhelming opposition. Luke wrote that at that time a great disturbance about the Christian faith arose. The trouble began with a silversmith named Demetrius, who made silver shrines of Artemis of the Ephesians. Now, I know the King James Version refers to it as Diana, but Diana is actually the Roman counterpart of Artemis. Artemis was the name of the goddess there in Ephesus. And she was a many-breasted goddess of fertility, likely based on a meteorite that had fallen in the area with a shape resembling a woman with many breasts. Demetrius gathered together the other silversmiths and workmen of similar trades to protest the threat to their business that Paul's preaching had created against idols. Demetrius added that the temple of the goddess Artemis of Ephesus might be viewed as trivial, deposing her from her magnificence as worshipped in Asia and the entire Roman world. I know it says world here, but the Greek word is oikoumene. Oikoumene is often used of the Roman world. And so that's why I've taken it here. Now this speech by Demetrius hit a nerve, for that temple was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. I think that the columns were 60 feet high. The temple was like 425 feet long by 222 feet wide. And it was one of the seven wonders of the world. So these people were very, very proud of that temple and their goddess. So this was like World War III, as far as they were concerned. Well, these words infuriated the craftsmen, so they began to cry out, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." The city was filled with confusion, so they caught two of Paul's travel companions, Gaius and Aristarchus, and dragging them, rushed into the theater, and Paul, of course, wanted to go in with them. Now, if Paul had gone in with them, with the attitude of the crowd that way, and Paul speaking what he did, he could have been killed. It was very easy, and that's why there was all this push to keep him out. However, God sovereignly protected Paul and the other believers from certain death by the mob. First, fellow believers and some Asiarchs. Asiarchs were officials in charge of the community's political and religious welfare. And these were friends of Paul. They urged him not to enter the theater. As what happens in the Middle East today, as what was happening at that time, in the Middle East, it's very easy to get a crowd in an uproar. Just say something that's a little, hot, and away they go. And sometimes the crowd will come together just because they're excited, not knowing what's going on. This is exactly what happened in Paul's day. Most of the crowd did not even know why they were there. So the Hebrews, who were monotheists and strongly opposed idols, thrust Alexander to the front to issue a disclaimer, that is, to explain that the reduction in Artemis's idol business was not their fault. See, what the Jews were trying to do is to say, wait a minute, this isn't our fault. But everybody knew that the Jews were opposed to idols. So when they put this man out there, they thought that it was the Jews that had created the uproar, and there was already a feeling of anti-Semitism underneath. So what happened is the anger was shifted away from the Christians right at the Jews. So when the crowd realized that Alexander was a Hebrew who was trying to make a defense of the Hebrews to them, the crowd's anti-Semitism took over, with the mob refusing to listen to him, and they chanted in frenzy for about 2 hours, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians." Well, the chief executive officer of the city, the Greek word for him is grammateos, which actually means scribe, but this is the word scribe that is used in a huge sense. He was the chief executive officer. He was the CEO of Ephesus. Came on stage, so the crowd quieted down to hear him speak. He argued that Artemis, the meteor, who fell down from heaven, was not man-made, so why should they be upset over Paul's preaching against man-made idols? Quite an argument here. He added that Gaius and Aristarchus and Paul, by application, were not temple robbers. Now, that's what the Jews were. See, in those days, the Gentiles, they would, if they wanted to go on a distant journey, they could bank, they could put their money, and they'd just lay it down right on the temple floor. And everybody else was supposed to be scared that they would be punished by the great goddess Artemis if they picked it up. Well, the Jews would wait until nobody's looking, they'd go ahead and pick the money up and take it. So they were known as temple robbers. Well, these Christians were not temple robbers. They wouldn't do that, and everybody knew that. So that's another reason why there was a lot of anti-Semitism. You know, there. People are losing their money, these guys. They were not slanderers of their goddess either. Paul had never said anything about Artemis. He was just talking about idols in general. So if Demetrius and the other craftsmen had a complaint, they could use the court system to bring appropriate charges. Meanwhile, the official declared that they should cease making a disturbance, for they were in danger of arousing the lethal reprisal of Rome for rioting. So he successfully dismissed the crowd. Now, it's interesting, the various factors that God used to protect Paul and his co-workers. When spiritual opposition to Paul's ministry exploded into a humanly overwhelming citywide riot against him and his co-workers, God sovereignly used other believers, the Asiarchs, unwise action even by unbelieving Hebrews. Who would have thought that the great foes to the Christian faith were unbelieving Hebrews, but God even used them. The city's chief executive officer, and fear of a lethal Roman reprisal for rioting to protect Paul and his co-workers. One of the great sins, according to the Roman Empire, was rioting. Rome did not like rioting because rioting would often fester reprisals and fester revolutions. And Rome did not want revolutions. And so what they would do, if there was a riot, they would tend to put it down. This is why when Pontius Pilate, when it came to the Feast of Passover, he spent time in Jerusalem. Normally he would spend time down in Caesarea on the seacoast. But the Jews were already very, very hopping mad at that they were still under Roman rule, especially at Passover, because Passover celebrated their liberation from pagans. And so the Jews tended to be very, very hot-blooded and angry around Passover. So that's why the Romans would put a special amount of soldiers in the city to guard it, to keep it from rioting. They didn't want any riots. So fear of reprisal from Rome for rioting was there. And of course, when the soldiers came in, they had these double-edged swords, and they would just kill people. You know, they weren't not diplomats at all. They were soldiers. And so people were feared. This is why it was called the Peace of Rome. It was a forced peace that everybody had to keep the peace with. So in application, may we rest assured that even if we face humanly overwhelming spiritual opposition in performing God's ministry assignments for us, our omnipotent God will sovereignly protect us while we serve him. There was a report I heard years ago in Soviet Russia. This is before the fall of the Russian Empire. The Russians had closed down a church. Apparently a pastor there had been preaching the gospel. And they thought the best thing to do to hinder the growth of Christianity is to close the church down. Well, when they closed the church down, Christians would go by on the sidewalk and they would bow and they would kneel in prayer facing the church. Well, that was an embarrassment to the Russians. They said, we got to do away with this. So they decided to tear the church down and build a great big city swimming pool. Well, what the Christians did is use it as a great big baptismal tank. They were bringing people in from all over, they're leading people to Christ, and they were baptizing there, left and right. And the Russians were beside themselves with, how in the world are we going to squelch this Christian faith? Well, they couldn't. But the Lord kept giving these Christians opportunity. At one time, all they could do was pray there. Now they could actually baptize people, so they were thrilled. So that type of experience is something that God demonstrates even in our day. In our generation, God is demonstrating that he's working very powerfully in the lives of people. In Ethiopia, during World War II, when the soldiers of Mussolini came into Ethiopia and started persecuting the Christians that were there, at one particular time, one of the Christians, they were going to electrocute the Christians, so they put him in a chair and wrapped all these wires around him. It was very crude. And turned the power on, but nothing happened. So they unwrapped him, they tested it, it worked fine, so they wrapped them up again. This happened three times, and every time they threw the power with a Christian in it, it wouldn't work. So it spooked the soldiers, and eventually they spooked and they fled, and a lot of the Christians just went home. Another time they had a prison there, and it had mud walls around the brick, and the Lord sent a very powerful storm that it rained almost sideways, and it wet the prison walls and melted the walls, and they fell down, and the prison was opened up. And the people who were guarding The Christians were afraid that they'd be reprimanded or persecuted or killed because of the Christians were released. And so the guards ran off, and the Christians said, well, what are we going to do? Let's go home. So they went home. And that's how the Christians grew from a group of 35 people to 2,000 by the time the missionaries were able to come back in after World War II. Tremendous stories about how God provided for his people. So we don't have to be concerned about the work of God and his protection. God will protect us from humanly overwhelming opposition so that we can achieve his objectives for us. This will work in our era too. We don't face that type of persecution today, but we may face a very strong spiritual warfare. And God can give us abundant victory over that warfare. But what we need to do is to rest in him and trust him and just keep focused on the job that he's given us. There's a reason why he's given us that job. He wants us to achieve it. And God will give us the victory if we do that.